Welcome to the Million Dollar Multi-Op Podcast. Here, you're going to find education, entertainment, and a little inspiration on how to get to the next level. Are you a DJ company owner that's looking for the secret sauce? Congrats, you found it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Million Dollar Multi-Op Podcast. I'm your host, David Osborne with BlueprintLearn.com. And today, we have a treat guest today. Today we have Brian Bonacici, or DJ Brian B, depends on how you know him. And a quick note and a quick intro on Brian. Brian is a luxury travel DJ, a top shelf entrepreneur, an industry educator, podcast host. He owns a successful mid-tier multi-op in Northwest Florida called B-Boy Productions, and he's a dad. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, what's up, Dave? How are you?
Doing great. You got the... get the studio audience going. And Brian is a jet setter. So, Brian, where are you calling from today?
Home, which has become the norm recently. Dad life has kind of changed things around, perspectives and all kinds of things. So, taking less, traveling less. And so I can safely say home.
Home. Today. And that's probably North Carolina now, right?
It is. Yeah. I moved here about a year and some change ago and started to love it. So yeah, here in Raleigh.
Fantastic. And your multi-op, B-Boy Productions, is in Destin.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Technically, it's not in the city of Destin, but we cover Destin. It's really just like the kind of the 30A corridor. So from Panama City all the way down to Pensacola, kind of that panhandle section of Florida. Yeah, we cover all that.
Yeah. And if you're a southerner like we are, 30A is the road, but it is the primo spot for vacationing. It's like, you know, it's almost like we have to go a little bit further every year to escape the sprawl from Destin. But it's the spot. I have a DJ on my team that's from Dothan, Alabama. So he's very close to that area. So everyone in the deep South is familiar with Destin.
Yeah. It's their spot. Beach.
It is our beach. Yeah. It's funny. My sister lives in the DC area and she talks about Virginia Beach and she talks about, oh, we're going to go down south to Myrtle Beach. And I'm like, oh, no. You got to keep going further. So what I think is such a treat to have you on the podcast today is because, you know, we're all multi-op owners or aspiring multi-op owners. And one of the things that comes up a lot is how to run a healthy business, a sellable, scalable business. And I think it's the E-Myth, if I'm not mistaken, that even if you're not planning on selling a business, running your business like it's sellable is one of the healthiest things you can do, almost like a franchise model. So why don't you just kind of give us the Cliff Notes version of the background of how you got to where you are in your career? And I think that will help give us some perspective.
Yeah. So I'm going to skip the beginning portions of my career and kind of move to where the multi-op kind of started for me, which was a move from California where I'd kind of grown up my entire life, wanted to pursue music full time, kind of be DJing full time. So I moved to Florida and was really in the nightlife sector for about a good year. It was a spring break haven for a long time. And so where I was DJing was a club that really outside of Panama City was the biggest place to be. We were averaging in peak season anywhere between 1500 to 1800 patrons at night, like literally Monday through Saturday, really. And so through that, I had a contract with them. And the great part about the contract was my start time on the weekends didn't start till 11 p.m. And at the time, I was mid-20s, so I was kind of past my party days of like the early 20s and was looking to make money. So I was kind of looking at different opportunities. I tried real estate, tried a couple other different things. Nothing really hit for me. I really loved the aspect of just kind of being in the DJ culture somehow. And one of the bartenders told me at the club, hey, have you ever tried doing private events here? This is like a mecca of private event space stuff here. And I'm like, really? And I had no idea. So she kind of linked me with a planner and a caterer. And I think part of it was being from California, that like cool factor. And I don't know if it's that as much anymore, but back then it was for sure. This is kind of dating myself, but probably like early mid 2000s, actually like 2008, I think around then. And I think that mystique of someone coming from LA to be there and kind of that LA area kind of vibe. And so I had a meeting with a client at a planner's office, and it was my first kind of intro to that world. And they, in that market, I should say, and they were just kind of blown away by the depth by which I was kind of asking the right questions, kind of just talking about things that normal DJs in the market that I was in weren't talking about at that time. And so quickly caught fire and grew pretty quickly with inquiries. And the cool thing was they have a noise ordinance out there because everyone wants to do it outside. So right. That ends at 10 o'clock. So my start time wasn't until 11. So I was kind of double dipping on the DJing front, literally stopping at 10, having a roadie kind of like clean me out while I was driving to my nightlife gig, and starting from 11 till 12:30 was my set time on the weekends. And doing that for a couple of months until the amount of inquiries and things coming in on the private event side was too tempting to really not take. And so I just kind of let my contract play out. I enjoyed not having to work till 4 a.m. on certain dates anymore, and was working till that 10 o'clock end time. I was like, oh, I'm making, you know, double, sometimes triple the money on the wedding side, and really enjoying it, to be quite honest. And so fast forward, essentially just kind of ran out of dates for people to book me for. So I kind of started bringing people on. And at first I really went after the accomplished DJs that I knew, because I thought that would be the quickest way to scale. And for me, the only connections I had were nightlife people. So I would try to bring them into the fold, get them before their shifts would start, hopefully. And that was kind of how we rolled for a little while. That model didn't work for me as much. And I think it was partly just naivete, early beginnings as a business owner and not really having some foundational things in place. And so really it was like whatever was paying more, whatever was paying better, whatever was more, not even the pay wasn't even really a factor. If the event was cooler, they might take that event. And I just didn't like the idea of, you know, having to hold these people to dates and like worry that they were going to cancel at the last minute. And yeah. It kind of came to a head when I had in that market, kind of the top tier planner. And it was an event that I had put one of our people on, and they basically canceled on me literally the night before. Oh, and I'm like, this is the planner I can't not have somebody there for. So I was stuck in between a rock and a hard place, called a friend of mine from Alabama, and I'll never forget. He came to the event. I mean, I gave him literally the rundown on everything, and he showed up and he was like, I'm DJ so-and-so. And like, he wouldn't give his real name to the planner, like his first and last name. It was like, I'm giving you my DJ name. And she's just kind of like one of those people who was like, I have to know your first and last name. Like it's just easier for me. I don't want to introduce you to the client this way. And he wouldn't let that go. Like, it was all about the DJ name. And so the event went okay. And that planner came back to me afterwards and said, I never want to work with that person again. You got one more shot. And I was like, I've got to switch this model. This is not working. I can't sustain this. And so then I switched and went to the train from the ground up approach, which was a lot longer of a process to ramp up. There wasn't a lot of resources like the blueprint out there. So like, you know, kind of just trying to figure it out from what I could put together from different educators, and we were dominating. And so it was great. And I kept that running for a couple of years, and then really just wanted to kind of be challenged more, and kind of decided to make a move after I got married and moved to New York City. And I will stop the story here and just kind of kept that multi-op. I didn't want to let it go because it was almost like a cash cow in some respects of like, this is my safety net. If things don't work out in New York, which is where we moved, I want to keep this kind of going so I have something to fall back on. And thank God I did. So I'll leave it there.
Well, some major like thankfulness that planner didn't cut you off, which is awesome.
thank God.
One more chance is better than no more chances. That means you also obviously had a solid relationship with that person, that they liked you enough to give you enough grace to come back, which one of the things that I know about you personally and by reputation is that you are fantastic with relationships, and which is a lot of your success on the travel side. And, you know, even when we speak with mutual friends, and I saw Rob Ferret or Drew Pierce, they speak so heavily about your relationship building ability. But I think that transitional point, I think that's a fascinating thing, because if you said, all right, Brian, you have to stop your multi-op, or you have to stop being in the same city as your multi-op January 1, you're like, okay, well, maybe I need to get some stuff together and start working on it. So I think it's interesting. What things did you already have in place from a systems, from an administration, from a full-time salaried staff that was running the business before you decided to go to New York?
So I didn't have anything in place before I decided to make the move. It was after I decided to make the move. I was like, I got a short window of time to figure this out. And my initial thought was, I'm going to come back once a month. We had regular team meetings monthly, and I was going to lead those because I felt like it was the time, those were the time where I could really impart kind of the vision, casting, check-ins, like we could talk through issues if there are any successes. And I felt like this would be the time to kind of do that on those monthly meetings. So my initial thought was, I don't have to worry about the booking side, because that is all done remotely. To be quite honest with you, I still to this day do all of the sales for that particular multi-op, even with it all kind of running, you know, what it is. And we do about, now we've kind of brought down the total count. I think we're doing about 300 shows a year, where we were at like 500. And I was handling
all the sales. You're doing all the sales?
Oh, yeah. I was doing all of that. Now, I say that I was taking on all the sales calls. We obviously had some systems in place to pre-qualify, get them on the calendar. It wasn't like I was literally just on that call for the 30 minutes to make sure it was the right fit. And I've got it down now to a science where it's, you know, pretty much 20 minutes at this point if I need to still do those, you know, those calls with people. But anyway, that was all done remotely. So from that standpoint, there really wasn't much of a change. Everybody had gravitated towards owning their own gear. So that was also a shift that we actually had started before I left. So there wasn't a need for a warehouse person necessarily. But the piece that was missing, and I had to figure it out, was the relationship side, to your point. Like that was such a calling card for our business. And I would say that market in general is just still to this day, even with the progression of Instagram and people being able to reach out to vendors directly, when you're planning a destination event, and everybody considers that area kind of a destination location for sure, the first call is usually a venue, and the second one is typically the planner. Sometimes those are interchangeable, but that's usually the one of the first two calls. So when that happens, vendor list visibility is massive, and then also referral by reputation from the planner is the second piece. And if you don't have those things in place, it's going to be a long shot to kind of get those through SEO stuff, because it's just a different, it's almost like they're about 20 years behind in the SEO progression and kind of the Instagram age from that stuff. And that's not a knock. It's just more or less the way that they operate there, and kind of learning how these local markets operate is massive. So I needed somebody in place. And so I was running into a lot of problems with that piece of it. And my short-term solution was, I'm going to use a DJ on my staff and grow them into the position. I'm going to find the person who I think has the best chance of success here and put them in that place. So what was I looking for? I was looking for somebody who could be relational. One, with the staff, because I needed to make sure that they didn't feel like this person was going to run away with it and book themselves on everything. I needed them to have a good rapport with the people that they were working with. And then secondly, that could make the connection point with planners and different people and help me grow the business, or at least at the very minimum, sustain it. So putting that person on salary was kind of my first move, was like, I've got to figure out how to afford this person. It's going to be a part-time position. It's not going to be a full-time. Obviously, at the time, there wasn't a WIPA. There wasn't all these different organizations. So this was like, you know, grinding it out, going out to these different places, making these connection points, because there wasn't any of these regular meetings to occur at the time. And so that was kind of my first hire, was to bring on somebody to manage the relationship building piece of it. The rest of it I could do all through different systems I had in place.
So you had that DJ on your staff, you gave them some tools, they ran with it, and then you moved. Mm-hmm. And that's you know, trial by fire now.
Yes.
Now you are remote. And what things from the, because you're still doing sales, your folks own their own gear. What things since you moved did you have to change or edit or adjust that were okay?
Yeah, because this was 2011. So kind of going back a couple of years. And I would say the first 6 months, I would come in into these monthly meetings, you know, share whatever I needed to share. I was very much still ingrained in what was happening there. We had systems in place where literally after an event, they would have to submit a report on how the events were happening. Of course, I read all of those. So like little things like that kept me plugged into what was happening on a micro level. And what I found though, and actually one of the DJs voiced this to me on our team. He said, it feels like you're the stork who's flying over and dropping off care packages every month. Like there's no real connection with you there anymore. Like you drop and I go, boy, that kind of hit me between the eyes. And I thought, this isn't going to work long term. Like I can't keep doing this. I literally need to let go of the reins and leave this with somebody. So the person I had in place to kind of be that relationship manager, I think it was, we were both at the same place where it was like, this needs to be released and this person needs to be empowered to kind of take on the role of really general manager of the operation of that division. Now, at the same time, I had a partner in the business that had since kind of transitioned out and they had moved to California about 6 months before I moved to California. I'm sorry, before I moved to New York City. And coming from, they literally lived in the same area that I had, you know, grown up in and kind of built my beginning of stages of my name kind of out there. So we were running literally like three divisions is the way I was kind of referring to it as. We had a California division of which we had two local DJs that I had known from the years of being there that we were using. She was managing it because she was kind of the salesperson and could crush sales. And so she was doing all of that. I was handling the Florida and the New York one, which the New York one was a baby at the time. You know, it was like I had one connection going in, which was gone by the time I got there. So I was literally starting from scratch. So there was no revenue like at all to start that division. So I was literally leaning on the Florida one. So I was flying back on a semi-regular basis to do shows in Florida to kind of help fund this New York operations until it kind of got off the ground. But I needed to be able to put more attention to it if it was ever going to grow. It's like anything. It's like if you just put a little bit of water, nothing's going to happen. It's going to die quick. So I was like, I've got to get out of this Florida market and start to really push, at least from the administrative side. So we made this person a general manager. For a long time, a couple of years, we basically had him running all the meetings. I wasn't there for the meetings anymore. He was in charge of the hiring, the firing, the kind of all of it. And, you know, it was really hard for me to figure out where to place myself in that equation of like being there to help him, but also not being overbearing and being like, I'm going to look over your shoulder every 2 seconds. So what I found was kind of the happy medium was to be available for, anytime that person needed to reach out to kind of talk things through and make adjustments as needed. And that worked for, man, I mean, we started that in, I guess, close to the beginning of 2012 all the way till 2019. I think the challenge, though, and this was the lesson kind of learned through this, was when you are transitioning from a traditional multi-op where you're there regularly to this remote situation, it's hard because the culture has been established for years and years and years already. So you're basically like redoing the entire culture of the company from me being there locally present, them seeing me grinding and working to now this like remote kind of situation where there's an owner in place, but he's not really there. And the person who's the GM, I found like that was a tricky spot for him. And again, I don't know the answer really, but I feel like he wasn't the vision caster necessarily. So there was almost like a third hand kind of third party communication thing happening where he was communicating the vision wasn't exactly the way I had framed it or whatever. So there was all a little bit of miss there. And so it never was the way it was before. If I had to redo it, I would say, hey, pick one or the other, either be remote and do it this way so the culture's built in a way that's everybody's familiar with, it doesn't change. There were some people on the staff where that change never like stuck with them. Like they never got over the fact that I had left. You know what I mean?
Yes. And you just hit on like several major things that are all so vital. It does always stem from you. And I think that's where I think a lot of people experience breakdowns in management. It's when the person who's representing you doesn't vibe like you. So then you get into all these murky waters where it's like, you know, fresh water meets salt water. And you're like, I don't know. What do we do here? So I think that's really powerful because there's no quick solution to any of that. And I think a lot of people want that silver bullet, magic bullet. Like, you know, let's just get this, fix it.
Like, well, and I'll say one other thing. Yeah, totally. One thing I didn't mention that I think is really important too, is that if you are empowering a GM, you have to have their back 100%. There was a few little bit of, I don't want to say people kind of trying to go around the system, but they would ask me certain things. And the minute that I defect and go in a different direction than what the GM has laid out, the breakdown in trust is massive. Thankfully, I knew that kind of going in. And I told him, any decision you make, I am firmly behind 100%. And I think that gave this person at least the feeling that, like, listen, there's not going to be any backbiting here, at least not with the owner here behind me, that he's got my back. And, you know, if there needs to be correction, it'll be done in private. It will never be done in front of the staff and all those kinds of things. And it'll probably be done at a quarterly meeting, not necessarily in the midst of kind of the trenches.
Yes. And it's almost like level one delegation versus level two delegation. Level one delegation, or at least the way that I thought about it when I started learning to delegate well, was, hey, here's a task to do. Hey, let me look at what you did. It's almost like a hiring third party Upwork type stuff. You know, you're farming out work, but it's still really your thing. But full delegation is where you give someone full ownership over the thing. And it's like, this is yours. This is your baby. And you're right. You got to back them completely, because if you don't, it's still yours. And it's not really delegated.
And there's also something to be said for, like, you know, you can give somebody the responsibility, but you don't give them the autonomy to make the decisions too, right? So like they're responsible to cover it all, but yet you're behind the scenes trying to like make all the decisions behind it. So I think there's also like a piece of it where they have to feel the ability to own it. And really own it, not just in name only and saying like, hey, you got to do this task, but like literally you have, you know, complete responsibility for the decision in it as well. And not just being given a task. As the owner, it's really important to like give enough rope where the business isn't going to fail like completely. Yeah. But you have to give them the ability to make the mistakes, because that's how we all learn, right? Like no one is perfect. So like we're all going to make mistakes. And so you give enough rope where like, hey, if it doesn't work out, it's not going to sink the ship. But, you know, we might have to patch a hole here or there, you know, and that's OK. Like that's how we learn.
And that's OK. I think you have to. It's like, I'm just mirroring back exactly what you said. You know, you don't have it all figured out from day one. You take risks. You try stuff. You empower other people to carry out a vision and to work on a team, and you just course correct as you go. You have meetings, you talk to each other, you keep working and you keep moving towards better than yesterday.
Yeah. Love it.
I have one other thing I want to chat with you about here before we start to wrap it up. You, and I think it's super relative to what we just talked about, is the idea that you have to put other people in ownership positions and you have to delegate and you have to create systems. You have so many different things that you do. You said it earlier. You're doing sales for B-Boy.
Yeah.
You have so many things you do. You've got a personal brand. You got a podcast. You got a DJ Collective. Yeah. You got coaching. You've got your own cohorts. Engage, speaking, your multi-op, your family. How do you just stay sane in terms of just navigating the waters of having so many things you got going on at a high level?
I think the people that are on the team, you have to have those conversations of like what the season's looking like. And I attribute this to like great rapport with my wife and kiddo, and knowing that, hey, listen, this is what this, we're all hands in. Like she now has, she just transitioned and she works as well remote. And she just started with a new company that's based in Australia of all places. So like, there's going to be travel where she's going to have to go to, you know, Perth is where they're based. And that never was something we had to worry about before. Like, you know, she may have gone on one New York trip, which is where her former company was based, once a year, but that was it. And that's usually a holiday party. So like, that's usually during dead season for me. So it was really simple, but now like the things are changing and the dynamics are changing and the kiddos getting, you know, way more, activities driven. And so like, there's things that are having to shift. So those are regular conversations of like, hey, what does this look like for the next 6 months or 3 months or, you know, whatever the case may be. And, what's important to us. And once we like sign off, it's like all hands in, we support each other in those endeavors. And it's not a resentment type of thing of like, oh, here he goes again. He's on the road another time. You know what I mean? Or doing this or doing that. Sometimes within that, there's course corrections, just like we just talked about. Within that course correction, I was like, hey, obviously these shows are on the books. There's nothing I can do to change that. But what I can do, even if it costs me, is like, let's bring in some reinforcements. If that's family to come in, if that's a babysitter, if that's a house cleaner, whatever the things could be that's going to make it a little bit easier to get through this. And then the next time we re-up, we're going to look at this again. But I think what happens often is that we run our business separate from all of our things that are really important to us, namely family, if we have relationships or whatever we're in. And then we get into the situation where like, oh, well, that's my thing. And that's what I'm going to do no matter what's happening. And so there's no agreement. And I think for, at least for me, the win has been us all being on the same page and signing off that this is the way we're going and having the flexibility to make changes if we need to within that.
Wow. You just got the level up, Brian. You got the level up. I love everything you just said. And I think, you know, I wish you could teach people self-awareness. That would be amazing. It seems by everything you're telling me that you have a lot of self-awareness because it's not, there's a solo cast that will have dropped before this one, this episode drops, about done is better than perfect, mm-hmm. right? Trying to pretend like you're perfect or that you've got everything figured out is impossible. So right. It's always just about constant improvement and trending positive, right? So
right.
It's you're doing the same things in your business and your personal life from a 30,000 foot view. And Dan Martell, an author of Buy Back Your Time, a book that mm-hmm. changed my life, he talks about, he does a weekly sync with his wife. Where they sit down, they compare calendars, they talk about the week ahead because they've got kids, they've got businesses, they're both entrepreneurs. And it's like, it's going to get lost. They share calendars. They have lots of systems for their family. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we work on here in my family is,
yeah,
whose Google calendar are we sharing or looking at, or how do we know who's doing what and not stepping over? We have four kids, so it's like, ah,
oh, you know, yeah.
stuff going on all the time.
Massive
but if
props.
You don't talk about expectations and you don't talk about, you don't communicate, you're never going to be able to produce on a high level. And that's in your business, that's in a personal life. So mm-hmm. communication, expectation management, and just really being open and supportive, I think is...
Yeah, that's really funny. I'll give you one funny thing too, is like, I could have the world thrown at me, but if I have like three things in place, then I'm good. Like I could take on all the world stresses, and they're random things, but like, now that we have a car, because in New York City, we didn't have one, but like it has to be clean. Like that has to happen. Like it has to be like car wash done. So I am like a crazy person about making sure that thing is at least washed every week. Haircut, number two. And third, like the dishes. Those are like three random things that like, if those things are in place, my life, you can throw the book at me. I can handle the stress. But like those little things, like if one of those is off, I'm just like a wreck. So like, it's funny how some of those things can just be the like, I don't want to say, what would it be? Just triggering, you know?
Yeah.
Messing it all up.
Because you're controlling the things you can control. You know, those are things you know that you can get to and you can take care of. And it makes you feel good. And again, I kind of go back to self-awareness. You're self-aware enough to know if I get these things done, I feel great. And if not, I feel terrible.
Totally. Totally.
Well, Brian, this has been hopefully the first of many conversations.
Yeah.
This has been a pleasure. Before we started, I was like, I like to keep the podcast pretty short and snappy. So I feel like we can go for another 2 hours, but we're going to go ahead and call it and we'll do this again another time. So tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, probably the best place is my Instagram. So DJ, the letters D, the letter J, Brian with an I, B as in boy, DJ Brian B official is the Instagram handle. So if you go there, it's probably the best place to connect with me. I got a link tree there and you can see all my other things.
Wonderful. Brian, it's been a pleasure.
Likewise,
thank you guys,
Dave,
for listening. And as always, you got free resources, blueprintlearn.com/resources. And we'll see you on the next one.